And you are listening to the Fans Wrestling Show here, FOW Live, on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick. With me, as always, Danny Danger, Mika Villas, and Eric may or may not join us sooner or later. But Danny, it is another week of wrestling, our third or fourth straight week of the year. And here we are.
We are here, yeah, 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Like, wow. 2023 is a brand new year indeed.
It's like they say, we are better than ever.
Yes, back and better than ever indeed. Another good week of wrestling. We're still on this seemingly never ending road to WrestleMania. We're leading into big New Japan show here in the United States this weekend.
A sold out show.
And it's only available in the United States on Fight TV.
Yeah, on paper, on your favorite channel.
Yes. Yeah, having to pay extra when you already have the streaming service to get all the events. I definitely do not enjoy that. That's the way they want to do it. So, I'll find another way to watch the events then.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to watch it. But
yeah.
Before we get to the big, this big huge show, Battle in the Valley, that is, it's of course it's something that people have been waiting for. For a while, since I guess it was announced that Mercedes Moné was challenging, here for
the Kyrie,
for Kyrie. The title. But before that, we had a huge show in Osaka, as the new beginning in Osaka just happened 5 days ago.
Over the weekend,
Some great matches. Of course, we'll talk about the title matches. I want to do also kind of talk about this match that may or may not necessarily have been what gave us the coming event for Battle at the Valley. But as everybody knows, Hiroshi Tanahashi was the selected person to face the winner of Okada and Shingo at Battle of the Valley. And he defeated Kenta in a very good 14-minute match.
One of the startling things, Tanahashi missing some of his front teeth. Apparently the longer form story on that is they were broken out during a match with Okada many years ago, okay? And he had surgical implants put in, and they've been going fine. And that afternoon of the show, while attempting to eat a protein bar, his surgical implants busted out of his mouth. So, a few hours till showtime, he's Tanahashi, he says, screw it, I'll get him fixed tomorrow. So he goes out there and wrestles looking like Toshiaki Kawada and Mark Briscoe. And he still managed to get the win. So this was the first show in Osaka with full cheering. As Japan said, as of February 1st, they lifted all restrictions of that nature for any and all events. So they're still asking that people wear masks. But as far as cheering and applause, it's completely open. The government is not dictating that. The individual venues, or companies or organizers or what have you could put on some stipulations like that. But Osaka's apparently a very loud and rowdy crowd, and they did not disappoint. Tanahashi always kind of, you know, feeds on that energy of the people. And it led him to a singles victory there against Kenta. He had a very good match that, you know, for the most part was free of shenanigans. There was kind of a chair brought in that ended up being, you know, both guys ended up falling onto. But compared to their match at the Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom 16, it was very, 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 very mild by comparison. But it was good. It was fun, and it was good to see Tanahashi looking great. You know, hit that high fly flow to get the big win.
Yeah. So first title match of the evening, we got a title change as House of Torture lost the championships, which they were forced to defend. Now, mind you, House of Torture had said they would retire the titles and no one was going to be there.
They retired them. They were not going to defend them.
New Japan said, no, 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 you're going to be defending him, and you're going to be defending it at Osaka. And Minoru Suzuki, Ren Narita, and El Desperado, which are now a new faction, Strong Style.
Just calling themselves Strong Style,
They are
got the big win. It was a heck of a match. It was a heck of a match. I'm a big House of Torture fan, so I wasn't sure if the new faction was going to be able to do it. But, El Desperado and Minoru Suzuki have been playing the same game that, you know, House of Torture's been playing, but for a lot longer than House of Torture's been playing it. You know, shenanigans and brawling and, outside interference and these kind of things. I mean, that was the marker of Suzuki-gun for its entire run. You have guys who use that style, but they also know how to outsmart that style. And that's what they did. And, you know, Ren's kind of definitely more of a straightforward, you know, fight you kind of guy. So Suzuki and Desperado kind of handled the shenanigans and let Ren Narita get in there and put the hurt down. And they did. And they got the big win and new never open weight six man champions.
You know, I will say I kind of like this setup with these three guys. You have the mentor of them all in Suzuki. But looking,
I mean, it's kind of a past, present, have, future kind of thing, right?
Exactly. You have him, Suzuki, as the leader and the mentor. You have El Desperado, who's more like in his prime. I mean,
he's one of the one of the top two or three guys in his division, in the junior heavyweight division,
absolutely. And then you got Ren Narita, his chosen future star,
absolutely.
It's really cool the way they have kind of have it set up here. So really fun and good stuff, and we'll probably see this title very active. I can imagine. So here we are. We're talking about who's going to leave Japan forever. Is it going to be Hikuleo? Is it going to be Jay White? You know, rumors are rumbling everywhere that both guys' contracts are expiring. But at the end of the day, Hikuleo puts down Jay White, and the era of the Switchblade is over.
Well, the era of the Switchblade in Japan, okay?
In Japan.
That was the stipulation. Loser leaves Japan. And it was kind of an odd moment, once Jay White kind of realized that the end was near. He was held in the chokeslam. He couldn't really fight it. He threw up the two sweep for Hikuleo to hit him with it one last time. And then chokeslam straight down and got the pin. I mean, that's a huge win for Hikuleo. That's pretty much his first big singles win, against, one of the top stars in New Japan for the last 5 years. And, loser leaves Japan. So Jay kind of said his goodbyes as well in the post-match promo about how much Japan meant to him. And, and he came there as kind of this, fresh-faced young kid in 2014 and entered the dojo system and and all this, and, you know, kind of said his tearful goodbyes. But, you know, so the stipulation to me was always, you know, yeah, it's loser leaves Japan. Everybody assumed that he loses the match. Oh, he's going to WWE. Oh, he's going to AEW. Oh, he's going to, you know, wherever. No, not necessarily. It was loser leaves Japan. It didn't say loser leaves New Japan. It didn't say, you know, loser gets fired. It didn't say loser's going to WWE. Okay. Jay White is still announced.
His contract.
But Jay White is still announced for February 18th. But he still has a match that is technically under the New Japan banner. And he will be having that match against Eddie Kingston. That match was already announced and advertised here in the United States. That is a New Japan Pro Wrestling show. And New Japan is looking to continue expanding their brand in the United States, you know, as Strong / New Japan America. You know, take one of your biggest stars that is, you know, English speaking. He's well versed. He's already established here in the United States thanks to the, you know, during pandemic, when he was jumping around between Impact and All Elite and going all over these places. You know, what better as a top name to help lead that brand, you know, going forward this year. But here comes the caveat of that too. So now this feud with Eddie Kingston has only today been announced a loser leaves town match, where now Jay White's trying to do to Eddie Kingston what he tried to do with Hikuleo, because he knows how much Japanese wrestling means to Eddie, etc. You know, to the point where AEW has brought in Japanese legends to fight Eddie Kingston, such as Jun Akiyama recently. You know, it's always been Eddie's goal to fight in Japan. You know, the G1 Climax has always been on his radar, some things he's wanted to do. So now Switchblade says, you know, the loser of this match will never fight in New Japan Pro Wrestling again. Trying to take away that dream from Eddie Kingston. So this is where it gets a little bit stronger now that this possibly could be Switchblade leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling. The stipulation of this match would force that. I don't see that happening. I see my vision is still that Jay leads the Strong brand and continues to be a top star there. Kenta will be fighting for the Strong Openweight Championship Battle in the Valley against Fred Rosser. So it's very possible Kenta wins that. Kenta and Switchblade, you know, keep Bullet Club at the forefront of the New Japan brand here in the United States. I see it, you know, especially since Eddie is not even contracted in New Japan. He's contracted through All Elite Wrestling, and he's been working some of the shows with the agreement, you know, that they have, that the two companies have. And I think it's just kind of a way to possibly get additional eyes, a pay-per-view eyes on the product. They've sold all the tickets. They're not pushing to sell tickets now. It's pushing to sell TV buys. And you take a match that was, you know, going to be a good match, etc. You know, people were probably excited to see. Now you add a big stipulation and a possible, you know, history-making thing. Could this be Jay White's last match under the New Japan banner? You know, could Eddie Kingston get, you know, one of the biggest wins in his career? You know, I don't think that's happening. I think it's a way to draw extra eyes in and hopefully, you know, sell a lot more pay-per-views this weekend. I don't think Jay White's going anywhere. I guarantee you places are offering him money. The offers are out there. He may or may not be interested, but I don't think he's going away just yet.
I like your theory. I really like your theory. But you know, Jay White, like you said, he's a top talent. And eyes around the world, and especially on this side of the pond, were on him. With his contract coming up, he is prime bait for NXT. to come in and to be one of Hunter's new toys, even main roster. Sean's new toy on NXT, but even on main roster, Triple H recognizes game. Jay White is not just a all-around good player of the game. Jay White is the all-around package where he is born, bred, and trained and easily inserted into in at least a semi-main event role if you were bringing him right to the big dance, so to speak.
Well, I think a lot of people said the same thing about Adam Cole. And, he came in NXT with a bang and everything, and then they didn't really seem to want to have plans with him too much after that.
Adam Cole's amazing. I mean,
so I would be afraid that – I know Jay White's very, very different. You know, I think Jay White's different, but I think by American fans, they're going to make a lot of connections between the two. You know, similar builds, you know, both kind of longish hair, bearded, you know, both really good talkers. You know, I think the American fans are going to make a lot of connections and say, oh, you know, they could, what, why are they going to be any different with this guy when they weren't willing to do whatever with Adam Cole, baby, and, you know,
I will tell you what, three words or three syllables, AJ Styles. So hear me out. There's no, if Jay White's intention was to stay in independence or go to AEW, they wouldn't be closing the doors to New Japan as much as they are. I mean, in my opinion, there's still a lot of storyline left with New Japan and Jay White. So for him to be putting himself in there's matches where, okay, possibly he could be gone forever, just tells me that he could be going to the Fed. And you know what?
Well, it's also professional wrestling and the match stipulation. If you remember correctly, Great O'Khan and Hiroshi Tenzan had a match where the loser could no longer use the Mongolian chop. 2 weeks later, Tenzan is still using the move, and they just kind of makeshift say, oh yeah, well, no, it's not in Mongolian chop, it's, you know, whatever, here's the difference. Like, he's doing the same fucking move. So it's pro wrestling, okay? We've seen guys retire, we've seen guys forced to do this, forced to do that, forced to do this. Things change, okay? So my thing is that, you know, yeah, Jay White is banned from Japan, you know, forced excursion right now. So he beats Eddie Kingston, he stays with the company, and he takes control of the U.S., but also still trying to find loopholes and weasel his way back into Japan so that he can take back over again.
I do believe that he is ready and primed for WWE, and I think that he can very well get the AJ Styles treatment. Will he go straight to the main roster and be in the position where, you know, he'll be out on him to succeed or fail? But I do believe that, yeah, that all signs lead to him going to the WWE. I could totally be wrong, right? I mean, nobody knows except for him and whoever signed him. But to me, that would be making the most sense. Right now, WWE needs more than ever top heels, right? I mean, they've got babyface at all. Who, yes, I mean, they can turn Rollins and Owens anytime, but right now there's money in Owens, who you just resigned. There's a lot of money on Rollins where he's at right now. Sammy being such a huge babyface, Cody coming back being such a big babyface. Roman Reigns obviously is going to be, you know, decreasing his shows. So what happens? You know, here's the opportunity. Bring somebody like Jay White. Come in and make a difference, you know, in the roster. And have a lot of great matches. Where is he going to stand out in AEW? What does AEW need from Jay White? I mean, look at the roster they have. Look at all the guys that they keep signing. And,
yeah,
you know,
they got way they got way more guys than they need already. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
way more guys than they can feature predominantly.
Right. So right now the benefit is to the WWE, especially with the way that Hunter is running things. It's, I think, it's a more enticing option. There's a reason why the rumors are that there are some, you know, former WWE talent that want to go back. And I mean, you keep. You hear even. I mean, and not to say that they want to go back, but you know, to think right now that FTR, you know, people can even fathom thinking that they could go back. You know, that's even in a conversation of fans makes you think anybody could go back. Right now, they're doing something, and yes. Sami Zayn may not win the championship. Sami Zayn may not headline WrestleMania. But look at what they're doing right now. They're giving these guys chances. And what's to say they're not going to give, you know, Jay White that same chance now? I mean, if he wants to come in, establish himself, and then go back into the independence much later and make even more money, great. I think that this is the time for Jay White to capitalize on the WWE's exposure. Because as great as Jay White is, and as talented and everything, I've gone to the last two WrestleCades, and I've seen his line versus the line of other wrestlers on his own level, or, you know, legends or has-beens, as so many people may say. And I'm sorry, but Jay White's line is not as big as it should be. And I think the only
it grew a lot from 2 years ago when he was there and I walked up and he looked bored and I talked to him for a while to where his line was 15 people deep this year. And that's because of that time he spent in the United States.
It is growing, but imagine what the WWE exposure will do for him when, you know, he can come to the Fed, do his thing, you know, in 5, 10 years, maybe I want to go back out, and the man will be printing money.
I mean, that's true. That's true. It just, you know, I guess creatively it just depends, you know, what he wants to do and possible money-wise, you know, but I don't think the story is closed there with New Japan, and it may never be. Yeah, you know, he may be able to go to the Fed or to AEW and hang out and all this stuff, and then, you know, go always be able to go back to Japan.
I have another question for you guys. This is going to be, I mean, I personally think this is a great point, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Does Cody Rhodes have the success he had in the indies leading to creating AEW, helping create AEW, if he had not been exposed to the fans in the WWE first? Could you
imagine? I mean, when he first hit the indies, he was hot off all that WWE exposure. That came from his time in the WWE. Had he just taken his slow time and risen up through the indies, it wouldn't have been. It would have taken a lot longer to achieve that, if at all.
Cody was bred by the E to be a star, no matter where he went or goes. I think that's the story of really Cody, because Cody was on the indies. Cody did kind of cut his teeth a little bit. He did TCW. He did little indies here and there. Before he got signed to WWE. So one name value is going to mean a lot, especially when you're a generational talent, especially with somebody's name as popular as Dusty Rhodes. That was going to give him at least a little buzz. But without his WWE background, no, he would not have been as successful in the indies. And I would guess, thinking about it, is he not the most successful WWE/indie person to go out and kind of do his thing, and you know, now he's back, but this is why he was out there. What he did was outstanding. I think he brought a lot of attention to the indies when he left, where people were like, oh, there's more wrestling, who, you know, just the casual fans were not really aware until Cody did his little tour of the indies. And I think now there are more people out there who are looking for independent wrestling and more turned to it because of Cody's departure from the E in the beginning.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say the same with Drew McIntyre. Like you said, Cody had, you know, the lineage name as well, playing his favor. And then, you know, he had connections with, friends that helped him start, you know, their own company with a money mark. But, Drew McIntyre did the same thing in a lot of ways for me, because Drew hit the indie scene first.
But Drew,
not only did I, as a fan, you know, realize, oh yeah, there's wrestling outside the scope. I always kind of knew there was, but I didn't know the quality of stuff people were doing. You know, I when I envisioned wrestling out, you know, independent wrestling, you know, outside of, you know, a few companies, Ring of Honor, you know, Mid-South or IWA Mid-South, and Reseda and a few others. I assumed it was all pretty much middle of nowhere, you know, fighting grannies, old out of shape guys, you know, and skinny young kids. And there is that. But I didn't realize that there was such a big wide depth and quality of caliber of talent across the independent scene, across the country and the world. And yet, you know, I think that was, to me as a wrestling fan, I think Drew McIntyre's independent run helped do that. And then Cody hit the scene several years later, once things were already rolling and the independent scene was starting to gain some traction, Cody just went and literally picked his opponents, picked people that he knew were good and had really good matches, with anybody he went to, and did great merchandise everywhere he went. Everybody wanted to meet him and see him. And, you know, also because these fans were like, oh man, you know, he's been stuck in Stardust. He hasn't been able to, you know, to be as good as we know he can be. So now he was free of Stardust and he was free of the confines of the evil empire, you know? So he could be his best self and be the star. And, he absolutely went and did that. So I think Jay has the possibility to be successful anywhere he goes. He's absolutely one of my top favorites in the world to watch. Everything he does, you know, from his words, he speaks and means truth. You believe everything he's saying with the emotion he conveys. When he speaks, it sounds important, and you feel like you need to pay attention to what he's saying. Of course, his in-ring stuff, whether it's 5 to 10 minutes or, you know, 45-minute main event Tokyo Dome, the guy puts on fantastic work. He has the ability to be successful anywhere. It just, you know, it just depends where he wants to go. And to me, as a New Japan fan, I want him to stay in New Japan and do things wrestling that style rather than having to change up a little bit to accommodate different audiences or different restrictions of television or what have you.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a learning curve in the WWE way, but I mean, we're seeing the way that some of the wrestlers were brought in and allowed to be, and before and after Hunter took over. I mean, two biggest case examples, Pete Dunne. I mean, sure, he kept the name Butch, and Gunther also kept the Gunther, but they looked different when they first were moved to the main roster. And it looked like they were going to be changing them a little bit. But then once Vince was gone and Gunther took charge, we saw different names, but that was Pete Dunne and that was Walter. and we saw exactly what they were best at. And I think that's what they can get out of Jay White. And he's a fantastic promo. And I don't want to see that wasted on YouTube.
Yeah. On Dark Elevation or on Honor Club in the, you know, the Ring of Honor program.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. If they really does bring him over, they do sign him, I think if we even a way is to put him on NXT. He should go straight to the main roster. That's the only thing that they should do with him. Because there's nothing that the NXT is not what it was before. Right? So it is not going to be the third indie. It is not going to be, you know, something to battle against the independents and AEW. It's just going to be a developmental place. And Jay White doesn't need to be there. If you're going to bring Jay White, put him straight to the main roster and make him make an impact.
Or he can go to Impact.
I was going to say, or Impact to make it.
Well, they already have an Impact. So here's how to make it.
There you go. So.
All right. That was the longest talk from a match that we've had in a long time.
From one specific match, yeah.
Yeah, but all right. Next up, Tama Tonga. Defended his never open weight title against ELP. I'm saying this week in this show, Bullet Club definitely not a very good night for them. Other than Bone Soldier, the rest of Bullet Club, face defeat. ELP of course losing to Tamatonga here.
Yeah, ELP lost to Tonga. Kenta lost to Tanahashi. House of Torture lost the trios belts. Yeah, and Jay White being forced excursion. It was definitely a rough night for Bullet Club. Yeah,
and of course your main event, without a doubt the match of the night, Okada defeats Shingo to retain the IWGP World Heavyweight Title.
And Okada takes the Dragon and survives. I think that's the first time anybody has taken that move and survived and continued on the match and gone on to win. But at one point, Okada did hit a straight clean Rainmaker, and Shingo was able to kick out too. I mean, they brought everything. You know, Shingo was champion during the pandemic when Okada was facing injuries, and he did beat him, you know, at one point for defending that title, but Okada was still suffering a lot of nagging injuries. So Shingo was waiting until Okada was, you know, at the top of his game, and he is right now. And he proved that with a very strong win over Shingo. And then he goes and handpicks his opponent for Battle in the Valley as Tanahashi, to give the fans and the American fans specifically, you know, a chance to see, essentially the greatest rivalry, or one of the greatest rivalries of the last 10 years, one more time live on United States soil.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a card do we have for Battle in the Valley. Of course, in your main event, co-main event, sorry, because they are titling this co-main event, Okada versus Tanahashi for the IWGP World Heavyweight title. Kairi will defend the IWGP Women's title versus Mercedes Moné. Zack Sabre Jr. will be defending the NJPW World Television title against Clark Connors. Filthy Rules fight between Homicide and Tom Lawler. A loser leaves New Japan Pro Wrestling match versus Eddie Kingston and Jay White. New Japan Strong Open Weight tag team title match as the Motor City Machine Guns defend against the West Coast Wrecking Crew. And Fred Roser will be defending the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Openweight title against Kenta. And in eight-man tag match, Adrian Quest, Josh Alexander, Máscara Dorada, and Rocky Romero will be facing off against Kevin Knight, Kushida, Daddy KC, and Volador Jr.
I mean, that's going to be a really, really good show. A lot of strong matches on there. You know, some well-established stars as well as some, you know, that are still working to establish their faces, especially here on U.S. soil, like Clark Connors. You know, it's going to be a really good show. Another thing before we leave the New Japan stratosphere, I wanted to talk about Okada and Kaito Kiyomiya in NOAH.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so we talked about it at the Wrestle Kingdom in Yokohama event where the match had to be stopped because they literally shot on each other. Kiyomiya came in without the benefit tag to break.
That was a straight-up fight. That was
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Crazy.
He came in and he kicked him right in the face after he kind of, you know, didn't he didn't no-sell his kicks. He just kind of barely acknowledged him. And so Kiyomiya just kicked him right in the face, like hooked it around, split Okada open.
He tried to kick that man.
Okada flips the shit, goes
across the
He goes full Inoki on him and just wails on him, okay? And then Kiyomiya finally breaks free and starts fighting back. And they got people trying to separate him. And they're still fighting. They're still fighting. And after being outside for like 2.5 minutes, you see the ref. He tells the guy to ring the bell and throws an X. And it's like, I can't. Like, they're not going to come back in the ring. They're, you know, this is it. This isn't going to be a match. You guys have more people need to come out here and break this up so we can continue on with the show. So NOAH booked the match, Kaito Kiyomiya versus Kazuchika Okada for the Keiji Muto final match show. And Okada just said, nah. He said, you guys, just because you guys put my face on a poster doesn't mean I'm going to show up. Okay, he said, I never agreed to this. You know, it's going to take a lot more to get me to come to your event than just kicking me in the face and putting my face on a poster. So, you know, Noah's still advertising, saying this match is going on. A couple weeks have passed now. Still saying this match is going on. This match is going on. Fans are getting hyped. They want to see it. You know, after the video of them fighting surfaces continues. It was the day after, the very next day after Okada had faced Shingo, Noah's having an event and Kaito Kiyomiya successfully defends his title. Okada comes out of the crowd in street clothes, boom, Rainmaker walks the fuck out. Okay. So he goes and he's recorded in the back saying, hey, or no, he doesn't walk out. He grabs the mic and he says, hey, I'll do it. I'll do the match, but I don't care about you. I'm not doing it because of you. He's like, you haven't earned an opportunity of me. He said, I'm doing it to shut up all these NOAH fans. Rainmaker completely playing asshole heel invader to a T. Amazing. So they have a press conference, right? To talk about the show, announce the match. Kinda no shows it. Kiyomiya is fucking pissed. He is, like, he's there just so fucking mad that Okada disrespected him by just not going to the press conference. Because they're supposed to fight this weekend is on the 18th. Battle in the Valley is on the 16th. I don't know. A couple days after. I think it's the 16th. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting my dates all wrong. But so there is supposed to be like a tag match leading up before they actually have a singles match. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Today's the 16th. So the 18th would be Battle in the Valley. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a couple days before the Great Muta show. Let me try and find my shit when I'm talking about, so I'm not completely grounded. But yeah, they're supposed to be having a okay, well, maybe they didn't have the tag match. Or that already passed, because yeah, 221 is when the show is, well, yeah. Yeah, and that's the semi-main event. So that's on 221. So Okada will be in San Jose, California on the 18th to face Hiroshi Tanahashi. And then a couple days later, he'll have to be back in Japan to wrestle Kiyomiya for a main event of Keiji Muto's retirement show. So maybe I'm thinking this tag match or something was supposed to happen and they decided not to or something. But I thought they were going to do like a preview tag. And I'm just missing it, maybe.
I mean, were they doing another one? Because they were in a tag when the fight broke out.
Yeah, they were in a tag, which is where the brawl broke up. But I thought Noah was going to do one like as part of a preview to an event leading up to this Muta, but I guess not. Maybe I'm just getting confused. And they were just advertising the original tag match. Yeah, that's what it just seems like. So that's a big weekend. If Keiji Muto, bye-bye show was not big enough with it being Keiji Muto's last match against Tetsuya Naito in the main event. Hiromu Takahashi will be there wrestling. Gedo and Taiji Ishimori are also there wrestling. So you have a lot of New Japan representatives as well, as you have your a DDT tag match. And on the pre-show, you also have a TJPW 8-woman tag match. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on. Very big weekend and few days, especially for Japanese pro wrestling.
Absolutely, it's huge. But that's not all that we have going on. Of course, AEW is starting their next pay-per-view, Revolution, on March the 5th, and I think they're going to be in California at the Chase Center. And headlining this match, MJF defending the AEW world title against Bryan Danielson in a 60-minute Iron Man match. The Guns will be defending the AEW world tag team titles versus the Acclaimed, versus the winner of the tag team battle royale and the winner of the casino tag team royale. And John Moxley will be facing off against Hangman Page in a Texas death match. And for the AEW TNT Championship, Samoa Joe will defend against Wardlow. So far, that's what's been announced. I'm not going to go through this card, the whole card, but I just want to get to this point and ask you guys your thoughts on MJF going 60 minutes with the American Dragon. Of course, we all know what Bryan Danielson's all about, but KMJF, keep up.
Yes, he can.
We've already talked about how I'm not really a big MJF fan of his wrestling specifically. I don't want to watch him wrestle 15 minutes, let alone 60 minutes. I don't care if he is wrestling against the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. He could probably complete it, because Dragon will work extra hard to make sure that he carries the kid to something that is at least considered worthy of an AEW main event pay-per-view slot. I'm definitely not interested to really watch it?
I'm interested, and I think the reason I'm even so more interested just because it's, you know, a title match, it's an Iron Man match. You don't get a whole lot of Iron Man matches out there. But I'm interested because it looks to me that MJF is taking it serious. He's worked on his physique. He looks good. I don't mean that just to me being, you know, a fangirl standpoint. I mean that he's in the gym. He's doing the work. Which means he's going out, doing the cardio, doing what he needs to do, I believe, to make this a match that is going to be memorable. So yeah, while you want to give Danielson the credit for in advance, I think that MJF is going to bring equal parts skill and entertainment to this thing, to make it something that people are going to talk about. That's my thought, that's my hope, and even if it's not, I mean, 60 minutes, let's go. I'll watch him be entertained. I don't need him to wrestle. He can sports entertain me. Whatever he wants to do, I'm fine, as long as they stay at the end of this thing. And
I mean, that's going to be the biggest test of his life. No doubt. Can he keep up with the American Dragon? I believe that this match will either make or break the rest of his career. I've seen enough, you know, Iron Man matches to know what I like and what I don't like about him. And this can go either, you know, great or horrible very quickly, depending on the route they take. Can MJF keep up with the American Dragon? That's a very good question. I would like to think that he can. I do love the character. I do love the persona. I love everything MJF is doing. So to be exposed in such a way would be a detriment. So I don't think that they're gonna do something that's going to hurt the career of MJF. But at the same time, who knows? They may think that he could do it. He may think he can do it. But at the end of the day, you know, only the best can go 60 minutes. 60 plus, technically, because some of these people like to go into overtime. But yeah, we shall see what happens. But yeah, Revolution is picking up to be quite a pay-per-view in, 3 weeks from now. So yeah, very, very interesting. And yeah, but now it is time for, you guys know it, we are on the road to WrestleMania this year in Los Angeles, California. WrestleMania goes Hollywood again, and bless the music gods, as the music's have been on perfect cue today. But yeah, the road to WrestleMania is looking quite nice. My goodness, that promo this past Monday, again, fourth Monday in a row, by the way, Monday Night Raw, number one on all cable and TV, you know, so good for them on that. As the top rated show on Monday night, fourth week in a row, Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn, they had probably one of my favorite talking segments in a while. You know, just from, you know, Sammy showing us his vulnerability, not knowing 100% that he could defeat the Tribal Chief, you know, knowing what Roman Reigns is capable of, knowing what the Bloodline is capable of to help Reigns retain the championship, you know, having that self-doubt. And then Cody, obviously, you know, he's been pulling the fans' emotional strings since he came back, right? you know, because he has a goal, he has a dream, and he has a vision and a mission to fulfill. He punched his ticket. Now he needs to, as he said, finish his story. But before that, it is this Saturday where Sami Zayn has a chance to finish his story. The story that started a few, you know, 1 or 2 years ago, that wasn't supposed to be more than a couple of weeks segments, that wasn't supposed to be what it has become now. Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn at Elimination Chamber for the WWE Universal Heavyweight Championship.
Now, I'm seeing some people already thinking that this Sami's story doesn't end at Elimination Chamber. They don't think he'll be the one to beat Roman, but they're seeing it. Fans are already, fantasy booking that it's going to be similar to Daniel Bryan working his way into WrestleMania 30. So, you know, so Sami loses. He still has to find a, he's still trying to find a way to get his revenge on Roman. And he wants in that main event, you know, doing something where, you know, first match of the show, maybe he has to beat Solo. You know, Solo Sikoa, you know, nobody's pinned the guy just yet in WWE. You know, if he can do that, then he can get his way to the main event. Course, he does the unthinkable, does that, and makes it to the main event, not necessarily to win, but possibly be there so Cody can pin Sami. Reigns loses the title, goes away, but when he does want to return, Reigns is still protected and says, hey, I didn't get pinned for the title, etc., etc. I don't know if I see it going that way. I think it's stronger for Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes 1-on-1. Cody getting the big win, you know, pushing back all the shenanigans or talking Roman out of, you know, leave the bloodline at home, you know, prove you're a real champion, etc., etc. And Cody's able to beat him 1-on-1. To me, that's the bigger story, but I think it's interesting that fans already see Sami in that capacity, that they want him to bust into the main event of WrestleMania. That's how popular Sami Zayn has become.
I think I said it last week. Sami has, in a way, earned this. He took this opportunity that was supposed to be a joke, and he potentially has made his rise and done the work to the point where he could be in the main event of WrestleMania. This was not supposed to happen. Sami Zayn was not supposed to be this caliber of superstar where people were invested in Sami and wanted Sami. They wanted Sami's happiness. Sami just wanted to be part of the bloodline. He wanted to be Sami Uso. People wanted that for Sami. They wanted him to be happy and to be a part of the bloodline, knowing that, you know, he's not really, but he is. But here we are, right outside on the road to WrestleMania, talking about Sami Zayn. This is his due, his just desserts, if you will. If there is an award for employee of the quote-unquote year in the WWE, and instead of a plaque, you get a shot at WrestleMania, then damn it, Sami, here you go. Everybody, and a lot of fans, I'm one of them, I'm behind this. Put Sami in the main event of WrestleMania. Again, your theory of keeping Roman strong by Sami getting pinned by Cody, because it's a foregone conclusion that Cody is going to win the championship at WrestleMania. So you make Roman strong by putting Sami in there. Sami gets pinned. Roman goes away. But at the same time, Sami is rewarded. Sami gets his opportunity, and Sami becomes a major player as we go past WrestleMania on our revenge tour. Let's go. I mean, Sami beating Roman, I could see it. He acknowledged Jay as his tribal chief, if you watched the last week's Raw. So I don't know what that means. I don't know what that does. Does Jay kind of, you know, we do have Elimination Chamber coming up. Does Jay take that tribal chiefness serious and comes and says, hey, Sammy, I'm not going to let you get beat up by my cousin. My cousin's out of control. We all know him is out of control. Does Jay interfering in the match between Sammy and Roman somehow catapult Sammy forward into WrestleMania main event? Perhaps. But whatever happens, the fact of the matter is, Sami Zayn has won and earned all these accolades, and especially a potential main event at WrestleMania. Good for him.
I mean, it could definitely happen. I don't know if it will. I don't think so. But, you know, it would need to make sense. I mean, heck, everybody's been calling for titles to be split. You know, I mean, could he split titles? Cody's been talking about bringing back the old Win Eagle belt. Could he have that title? Could he end the reign of the Universal Heavyweight Championship and we could see a new belt in the horizon? I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen, right? I mean, heck, last minute, The Rock still decided he wants to show up and still be here and be a part of WrestleMania. There's so much that could still happen. But that's not all that's happening this Friday. Friday night, of course, we are going to see Brock Lesnar going one-on-one against Bobby Lashley. Question I pose to you guys is, are we going to see the Hurt Business reunite at Elimination Chamber?
I mean, I think it's time. I think the fans want it. I think, I think the fans want it. I think it's, you know, time for the group to get back together. You know, I think they'll be stronger as a unit than they were individually, especially if the bloodline, you know, is collapsing. You know, because WWE likes to have some factions, but typically they want to have one dominant heel faction and then people trying to take that down. They're not into, you know, it's been a long, long time since there's been multiple factions charging at each other in the WWE. I think if I remember the last time, it was a race war, technically, where you had Los Barricas versus the skinhead bikers versus the Black Power guys. If I remember correctly, that was the official race war there that we had in WWE for a while.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was the race war, basically. If I remember, you know, any other time, it's pretty much been a dominant heel faction, and then the good guys don't really team up and create a faction to go against them. They just kind of chip away at them in pieces. You know, a tag team comes along, Beast takes the tag belts, or takes a, you know, secondary title, and then once somebody takes the big championship away, the faction kind of dissolves, crumbles, usually ends up fighting against each other, somebody turns on somebody. You know, but there was no big faction opposite Evolution. So after the race war, you had Hart Foundation versus DX. But that pretty much was one of the last times you had main event level multi-factions. So I don't see, especially I don't see two big heel factions. Whether the Hurt Business, they're going to have their fan support, but I think they work best with a little bit of a heel edge. The Bloodline essentially has a lot of fans, but they work with kind of a heel edge. So if the Bloodline dissolves, I think the Hurt Business can go in and take that role. No, I don't think they're going to be dominating the airtime the way the Bloodline has, but I think I think the company would be ready for them without the bloodline overshadowing them.
You know, I have, as he is talking about this, I have a huge thought, and maybe a terrible idea, I don't know. But probably let's say, let's say Roman Reigns loses his smile after WrestleMania because, you know, he lost the championships and, you know,
his family fell apart
without it. But what if they were to come back at Survivor SummerSlam or Survivor Series and face off against the Hurt Business? It's a Bloodline versus Hurt Business matchup. The one that finally, you know, gets the fans award and turn you know, Roman Reigns into a full fledged babyface that the fans actually want to cheer for.
I don't know if that feud puts the Bloodline as face or not. I still think that, you know, if they go out there with Paul Heyman and everything, I still think the Hurt Business would be the baby faces because they're the underdogs. The Bloodline dominated and controlled. Bloodline steps away. A new faction takes over. That doesn't mean that the Bloodline is absolved of any and all of their sins just because they were gone. You know, it's possible. I mean, but I think once the Bloodline falls apart, I think it's going to be kind of time for everybody to start doing their own thing again, you know, because Roman's been talking about wanting to take a lighter schedule and, you know, explore, his cousin's Hollywood options, you know. There's probably a lot more movies where he can play The Rock's cousin. Those spots will always be there for him. And Jason Momoa probably needs a stunt double or something for Aquaman 2 or whatever. I don't know if I see that. I think that pretty much once they dissolve, they kind of dissolve. And, you know, maybe the Usos, you know, probably stay closer to Sokoa still. Anything is possible in the World Wrestling Federation. But, maybe as good as any idea, I guess.
Hurt Business is not high enough on the totem pole to make us care about them like that, unfortunately. So,
well, I think that's where you would have to give them time, too. And if you give them the time, 6 months or so, it could. I don't know. I mean, yeah, yet again, anything's possible. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of work that would need to be done, yeah.
Definitely. Well, the rest of the card shaping up to be a good one. Edge and Beth Phoenix versus the Judgment Day's Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley. Asuka versus Liv Morgan versus Nikki Cross versus Raquel Rodriguez versus Natalia versus Carmella for the women's championship title opportunity at WrestleMania. Who is the favorite coming out of here, out of this one?
Nobody.
I mean, nobody?
Nobody. I mean, okay, listen. They're probably going to give it to Carmella. Just because Carmella's come back and they've invested so much time in her. And yeah, I know. I don't like it. I don't like it. But I think that's what they're going to do. So if I got to pick a winner, we're all losing. I don't see anybody beating Bianca at WrestleMania. Not out of these women who are.
Yeah. Okay. My personal wish would be for Asuka to win, but yeah, I think somebody else might. Might win. Carmella, I think definitely is a choice that could be made. I could see Raquel Rodriguez getting a shot also easily. And Liv is always somebody who the people are always for and who could root behind. And with a complete, total, uninterrupted, COVID temperature or situation state, would be allowed to do a lot more things and play with different instruments and different stuff that he may have not been able to do with COVID. But here she has an opportunity, you know, and I don't hate it. So for the man, we got the United States Championship on the line. Austin Theory will defend against Seth Rollins, Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, and Montez Ford. The rumor is that Austin Theory will be facing John Cena for the possibly for the title, possibly not. John Cena, John Cena match does not need a championship to be important. And this can make or break the kid's career, especially if he loses the title, because we know what the Cerebral Assassin, the King of Kings, the game is capable of. And if he knows he's going out, he may go out with a bang. So who do you guys like here on this in this elimination chamber for the man?
I don't know.
I mean, I definitely think the Theory is going to lose the match.
Well, everybody will have to lose the match in order for one guy to win. That's how the elimination chamber works.
Obviously, but I think, I'm sorry, I made the title. I definitely know the Theory. I mean, I definitely believe the Theory will lose the title. So,
okay.
Rollins, in my opinion, is somebody who's looking at that possible Logan Paul match, which, again, another match that does not need the title.
I don't think that Theory loses. Like, here, that I know it's probably very, very far-fetched, but out of everybody in that match, like you said, Rollins doesn't need a title. Bronson Reed, why is he here? Damian Priest, you're okay with the Judgment Day. We don't really, go back to, your guyliner guy. Theory somehow ekes out a win, and it gives him more confidence of being the now. And the now runs into, an invisible person, John Cena, If we don't get Rock, we got to get Cena. We got to get some Hollywood person for WrestleMania Hollywood. And what better way than to get, idol versus, idol. I mean, Theory clearly idolizes Cena. We know this for a fact. So why not give this kid, and the world a nice little something to look at? The past, the present, and the future all in one match.
I mean, it's yet again, it's doable. Possible.
Yeah. I mean, they could go a lot of different ways. And that's a great thing about this match is that it could go so many different ways. We just don't know. And that's something that's really fun looking at this. At the situation, at this match. But yeah, that's the Elimination Chamber. And so, let's see it. I said it. I don't think Sami Zayn is going to win against Roman Reigns. Do you guys believe that there is a chance? I mean, where are you in the percentage? I mean, you're 100% sure who's going to win? Or do you have a slight belief that Sami Zayn can pull out the win and do the unthinkable?
I mean, yet again, anything's possible, but I think it's,
I think it'll be a good story. I think there'll be a lot of good moments where it feels like Sammy's actually going to do it, but I think he has very little chance of actually winning.
Sammy wins via disqualification and gets inserted into the Mania title picture. Sammy wins it. Not.
So he wins but doesn't walk out with the championship. Okay.
All right, well, that's it. Now we just have to wait until Sunday and see what happens in Montreal. I mean, that crowd is going to be en fuego all night long.
How do you say fuego in Canadian?
And you know what they say? I mean, it could you know, Canada go crazy? May they riot if their beloved son does not win? I don't know, but you couldn't have picked a better story at this point. Switching gears, this week we lost a huge name in pro wrestling, and a name that has probably had more to do with the wrestling that we love endure. Jerry Jarrett passed away 2 days ago on Valentine's Day at the age of 80 years old. I mean, what can we say? You know, Jerry Jarrett, he ruled Tennessee, you know. It's his home state, and it's where he made his career. Of course, there's a rumor that he would have been the guy that would have taken over WWE when Vince McMahon was dealing with the the storage scandal in 1994, a great year in wrestling. Through that he spent time in many different places until 2002, I think, 2001, 2002, when he created TNA, at that time, NWA, TNA, what we know now as Impact Wrestling, and, you know, the effect that the little engine that could or maybe couldn't or maybe shouldn't still be happening, survive into what it is today. I mean, let's see countless number of wrestlers who we've seen come through Impact that are now top level tier all over the world. But yeah, Jerry Jarrett, a person we definitely will miss in this crazy world of wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely, extremely successful, you know, through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and apparently then, you know, was less active in wrestling and more active in real estate development. And that's how he just made outrageous amounts of money, you know, as he was kind of the original money man founder for TNA until the Carters came in and Panda Energy, et cetera, et cetera. And of course he gave us his son, Jeff Jarrett, the chosen one, who himself is somehow still making lots of money in professional wrestling. You want to talk about somebody who had an amazing year in professional wrestling with jumping around, collecting big money checks, and doing very little, was Jeff Jarrett. Definitely a big name to lose, an important person. Wrestling definitely would not be what it is, in the capacity it is without his contributions, no doubt.
The boy said it all. There's nothing to say other than, you know, friends, family, fans, condolences, but he lived a long life and left a legacy in the wrestling or wrestling business, depending on you know, what side of the Mason Dixon line you found yourself being a fan.
Yeah, definitely somebody who played a huge impact in pro wrestling, and that was not a pun intended, but what the heck? Sure, why not? Of course, Jeff Jarrett, his son, works for AEW. Yeah, he had to wrestle the same night. You know, that's that professional in him. You know, even though dad passed away, he went in there and wrestled, and you know. Had his, you know, it was an emotional moment. I mean, can you imagine having to do the wrestling on the night, the day you find out your father's passed away? I mean,
it was apparently Jerry's wife. I don't think it was Jeff's father or Jeff's mother, but Jerry's wife who said go out there. Your dad would want you to go out and wrestle. Your dad wouldn't want you to take a day off. That was the kind of guy he was. He was the one who convinced Jeff to go out and wrestle on TV. He said, hey, you got a scheduled match for TV. You go out there and you wrestle.
Yeah, I could imagine Jerry going, spend your days rolling around the clock. Anyways, yeah. Get in that ring, boy. But yeah. It's, yeah, Jerry will be a name that will everybody will remember forever. And, you know, a huge piece of pro wrestling. It's not gone. But with the new, of course, WWE has to deal with A&E, the TV channel. And apparently, a new TV show has transpired. Stone Cold Takes in America. Now, I got to give it to Steve Austin. He's managed to have at least five different TV shows with different networks about things that he himself in the ranch likes to do. You know, he's had Redneck Island. He's had those Redneck Games. I can't remember what he called that other thing. You know, he's done all these obstacle course shows. And now here, Stone Cold Takes on America. Stone Cold Steve Austin sets out on the road with one of the most renowned. He takes viewers on an epic adventure as he redefines what life after years of wrestling looks like and experiences everything he missed out on the road. So it looks like
it's a Steve Austin travel show, basically.
Yeah, he's taking a field trip throughout America, and like, you know, he's just gonna see what he sees and take us
eat and drink and. Do a bunch of weird stuff. I mean, I think people will be very excited for a show like that. What would Stone Cold Steve Austin say and do?
Yeah. I mean, he's drawn ratings. There's a reason he's getting these shows. People are watching. People are tuning in. So as long as people keep watching, they're going to keep.
All right, and lastly, EC3 joins the NWA. Apparently, he's going to bring his Control Your Narrative to the network. But I guess that this basically means both owners of Create Your Narrative are now working for other companies. So, is the... organization officially defunct. I mean, it's just a way for, I think, EC3 to try and make some money, which kudos. He got 15 people to show up to one of his shows at WrestleMania weekend, but yeah.
I think that whole Control Your Narrative took lots of hits in its short-lived lifespan. And I guess the biggest one, which I didn't care about, but with Braun leaving and also Malakai Black kind of fading out. So what to do when everybody sells out? You sell out as well.
And Danny wouldn't even think fight it, wouldn't answer. He's not gonna waste his breath on.
I mean, Danny was not a fan of Control Your Narrative, and I get it. I understand. It wasn't everybody's cup of tea. But in wrestling, you take some chances, you gamble. EC3 took a huge risk, a huge gamble. He had this whole premise, and for better or for worse, he shot a shot. Maybe not as successful as he would have wanted, but there are some people who I think benefited from this experiment, and goes to them.
Well, we'll see if it pays off. But I cannot wait for us to be able to get back next week and talk about the fallout of Elimination Chamber. And a battle in the valley and see what is in store as we continue to be on this crazy ride to WrestleMania Hollywood. I wish they made videos like they did the first time. As we've only been seeing that they repeated doing the old videos, but man, those are some funny stuff. I wish they had made new ones. But the road to WrestleMania, WWE goes Hollywood again. This time bigger than ever, and it's an exciting time to be fans. So, fans, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us this Thursday evening. It is Thursday, right? I keep thinking it's Wednesday. On Podbean, like you said, follow us on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Spotify, wherever you can hear your podcast. We're on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F. Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. Eric's somewhere out there, but he is on Twitter as well. That's EJ423X. And I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.